Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
15 years. Out of time. And if you've been listening to the news or the internet or cable TV or whatever over the last few days, you've heard a lot about 9/11. And it's not my intention this morning to repeat what you've probably heard, because I believe most of the news has been focused on the actual events of that morning, and they've been trying to build up the drama and redo the paint. That's kind of what the news does. And I don't like to spend a lot of time talking about drama, even with an event that was as obviously as significant as this was. The truth is, all of us have events in our past that were so significant to us that we remember exactly where we were and what we were doing at the moment we heard, right? I mean, the first one for me was President Kennedy's assassination in 1963. A few of you were old enough to do that. I think I was 13 years old. I was in junior high school science class. And the principal came over the loudspeaker, and his voice was shaking, and he said the president's been shot, and they brought all the buses up, and they sent us home early. So it was obviously important. I mean, some of the memories we have are good ones, but it's the bad ones that really seem to stick for some strange reason. For some of you, I know it was Dr. King's assassination in 1968. I also have a friend in East who was born in East Germany, and for her, it was the Berlin Wall coming down. That was a big event in her life. She was about 18 years old at the time. Now, that was a good memory. But another one, one of my first cousins was working in downtown Oklahoma City in 1995 when that happened. In fact, she worked in the building that blew up on the sixth floor. She just happened to be late to work that morning. She forgot something at home, had to go back, had to park 5 blocks away, and was walking towards the building when it went. And that really was something that she will never forget. We all have our own unique memories about lots of different events. But 9/11 was different. It really was. It was arguably the defining event of the last 50 years, if not the last century. It was kind of a game changer because it brought a foreign war to our country that had not happened before since 1812, actually, going back that far. For me, I was at home when it happened, which was a lucky coincidence because I was actually supposed to be piloting a Delta 767 back from Munich. I would have been over the North Atlantic that Tuesday morning and spent a week in Canada. But as it turns out, a couple days before my trip, the company needed my seat for a training flight. So they called and said, "You don't have to go. We'll still pay you. We're going to put a student in there." So that's kind of what happened. So I was at home, and I was reading, and the phone rang about 8:45, 8:30, whatever it was, and it was an American Airlines flight attendant that I had known for years who went to the church, and she said, "You know what's happening?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Turn on the TV," which I did. And I was immediately sucked into that drama that most of the rest of the world, a lot of them, were already experiencing. A few minutes after tuning in, I saw the second airplane hit, and I saw the first building go down and the second building. You all remember that. And like everyone here, everyone everywhere, I was in shock. I sat staring at the television, transfixed. I don't even think I blinked. For almost 2 hours, I was horrified, unable to look away. I saw the replays. They kept doing it over and over. But at a certain point, I remember it very, very succinctly because I was doing this, what I'm doing, immersed in this teaching. I remember looking at the TV and going, "I need to get away from this. I need to stop watching because what this is doing to my consciousness is not good." I remember thinking, "I need to go somewhere and sit and to start focusing on something better, on what lesson could possibly come out of this that we could actually benefit from this terrible stuff that was being shown over and over." And it wasn't easy, but I turned off the TV, cold turkey, went in the other room to my regular meditation chair, and I sat there and I started to try to imagine what good could come out of this, the most horrific event any of us could imagine. Now, at the time, I remember thinking something, and this really struck me. I remember this. If what we were seeing on TV, instead of being, real events, was advertising for a movie that was coming out in 2 or 3 months, you know, we would have been excited. And when that movie came out, people would have spent millions of dollars going to see these airplanes hit and the buildings fall down and all that stuff. We would have been entertained. We would have been entertained by the movie, not by reality. So that alone should tell us, even today, this long later, that the problem we face as a race of human beings is more than just a terrorist threat. It's more than that. In fact, it's not something that's happening to us. It is actually something that we are creating. Now, how do I know this? Because I believe that life is a creative experience. We are creative beings in a universe that responds to our beliefs. That's how we create our experience. I think we all need to understand something, and that is, I hope this may upset somebody that never bothered me before. Why should it bother me now? Anyway, the greatest problem we face now is not ISIS, or ISIL or Daesh, whatever they call themselves. It's not radical religion. It's not white supremacists. It's not the political or economic meltdown like the market dropping last Friday. The biggest problem we face is our own collective consciousness.
Yes.
That's what it is. That's what's creating this mess that we are in right now. All of the school shootings and the church and the office and the nightclub shootings and the bombings and the wars and all that other stuff. And if we don't come up with a spiritual solution very soon, in addition to whatever political solution the candidates or Congress or whoever it is comes up with, and if we don't figure out how to implement that spiritual solution very, very soon in a way that works for everybody, then things are only going to get worse, which is exactly what's been happening over the last 15 years since 9/11. Now, I'm not trying to downplay what happened, all right? And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. What happened on that morning, that beautiful Tuesday morning, right out of whatever, was a tragic, heartbreaking, unthinkable disaster beyond anything we could imagine at the time. Now we can imagine more because wars happen. And we didn't just lose a few buildings and a few thousand people. What we really lost was our innocence. We lost our innocence. The problems of the world that we had been reading about that were happening over there in the Middle East and Asia and Africa and Indonesia and all those different places were now over here. They weren't just over there anymore. We couldn't pretend that we were safe anymore, even though what's interesting is we were actually just as safe or just as not safe as we had been the day before. I mean, it's very interesting. When we woke up the next morning, almost assuming you could get to sleep, we all believed that the world had completely changed. That's what everybody was talking about. But the truth is, it had not changed at all. The world was still moving in the same direction it had been moving for years. The only difference was it had finally reached a point that affected us personally. It finally reached a point that caught our attention. Now we, when I say we, I don't mean we in this room or we in this city or this country. I mean every single person in the world. We have been creating this world that we're living in for thousands of years in all sorts of different ways. But as big a shock as 9/11 was, it did not come out of nowhere. It came as a direct result of things we had done and things we had not done. It came out of our beliefs that we accepted without question and beliefs that we didn't even know we had or that we refused to acknowledge. It came out of things we had focused on and things we refused to look at. Today I want to talk a little bit about 9/11, not as a historical event, but as a spiritual opportunity that we squandered.
Yeah.
You know that word? It's a spiritual opportunity that we squandered. In fact, it wasn't just one lesson. It was a whole bunch of different lessons, spiritual lessons, that we need to learn, but because we obviously didn't. And the funny thing about spiritual lessons is, if we don't learn them when they show up, you know what happens? They keep showing up until we finally learn. Now, when I say we didn't learn what we needed to learn, I'm not trying to blame anybody. There's plenty of blame to go around. But I do want to talk about how every event like this that happens, if we do learn from it, will greatly reduce the possibility of it or something similar happening again. That's why we need to learn the lessons. Now, there are some people who believe we did learn some lessons from 9/11, but they believe that the lessons we learned were things like the world is a dangerous place, or we need more weapons and more laws and more security so that we can be safe. We can't trust those people. We can't let them in. We can't let them out. We can't because they're not like us. But those aren't the lessons I'm talking about, because those aren't lessons. Those are conclusions, and those kind of conclusions only make things worse because they divide us. They divide us. They encourage anger and hatred, and they attempt to prevent violence with more violence. That's what they do. Now, one of the biggest lessons of all these different violent events that are now crossing borders and happening everywhere is that now we can see that our world is much smaller than we thought it was before. Much, much smaller. Now we see that we can no longer separate ourselves from any part of the world, not physically, because borders really don't mean a whole lot now. It's not just Europe, it's everywhere. People can get wherever they want to get. Not emotionally, and especially not spiritually. You see, the problem is, anytime something like this happens, whether it's in London or Madrid or Paris or Nice, New York City or Columbine or Sandy Hook or Charleston, run through the list, there's enough of it. After the shock wears off, and after the pain and the suffering starts to become very real and immediate, we get confused, especially when the media gets involved. We get angry, we get outraged, we start looking for a place to vent our emotions. And our emotions, our anger screams out that somebody needs to pay for this. We look for somebody out there to blame. Now, we feel compassion, but the only compassion we feel is for the victims. And that seems to kind of fuel the fire. But what do we do? What do we do when something like this happens? That's the hard part. How do we handle these things? I mean, we know we have to do something, but what do? Especially if we stop to realize, which we rarely do, that the kind of world we're going to create for ourselves going forward will depend upon either the wisdom or the stupidity of the decisions we make today, once we realize that. Unfortunately, over the last 15 years or so, it seems like the dumb decisions have greatly outnumbered the smart ones. Just seems like that to me. Dr. Ernest Holmes, who's the founder of this teaching, The Science of Mind, if you're visiting here, he tells us that our emotions are very, very powerful because they provide the energy behind our thoughts and our beliefs. That's how we create. So the lesson here is, whenever we find ourselves immersed in a wave of emotion, like Angela was this morning in traffic, okay, when we react to the headlines and the videos showing human beings being blown over by trucks, shot, suffering, whatever it is, it's especially important that at that time we stay in touch with the essence of our spirituality. Because as spiritual beings, the very best that we are shines through only when we express emotions that support the ideas of life, love, compassion, and peace. Life, love, compassion, and peace. There's more, but that's a good four to start with. That means in every situation, no matter how difficult that situation may be, that's a big lesson that we need to learn. Now, one way we can do this is through prayer. There was a lot of praying going on after 9/11. Churches were full the following Sunday. It happened on a Tuesday. 5 days later, the Sunday, every church in the country, every synagogue, they were all packed. How many people were over at Woodruff that Sunday? I know a few of you were that Sunday. I mean, seats 420 people, and we had 100 people standing in the aisles. That many people were looking for these kind of answers. In our teaching, prayer is different. In our teaching, prayer is a conscious recognition of a higher truth. That's all it really is. That is everywhere present. Everywhere, all the time. I think Emerson said it best when he wrote down that, when he said that prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life from the highest point of view. Prayer is simply the contemplation of what we see from the highest possible point of view that we can imagine. But that means, if we want that prayer to be effective, that it has to be in harmony with the best of life. It has to be in harmony with a loving and intelligent creative power. In other words, prayer works, I talked about this last week, I think, only as long as we're praying for peace instead of praying for victory. You get the difference? It's very, very different. As long as we're praying for an end to all suffering, not just in our country or with our race or with our religion. It works as long as we are praying for God to help us to destroy some other human being, some other country, whatever it happens to be. 15 years ago, there were a lot of discussions on television, I remember seeing them, and a few on the internet, it wasn't as big then, between various religious leaders, some of whom made sense, some of whom not so much. And what they were talking about was how a loving and merciful God could permit such a terrible thing to happen. Why didn't he stop it? That was the big religious argument at the time. And I remember thinking, I couldn't really address that question directly because it talks about something that we don't believe. The God of my understanding doesn't permit anything to happen in the world. He doesn't prevent anything to happen in the world. It has given us a creative mind that we can use to create anything we can imagine, and it's provided us with an abundant universe that has everything we need to create whatever we want. That's simple. So it didn't create, it can't prevent. Of course, we have to choose the kind of world we want. That's part of it, but it's always there. That's why the most significant power in our possession is not just our ability to make choices, it's the freedom we have to make whatever choices we desire. That's what we have to decide as we're making these different kinds of choices. We can create love and prosperity and health, expressing life in a way that serves everyone, or we can make choices based on fear and anger and misunderstanding and create terrible results like we're seeing around the world. So here's another lesson that we need to learn that we didn't. Even when we make foolish choices that create hell on earth for a lot of people, this power for good that we call God is always, always there. It's always present. The best of our spiritual nature is always ready to come forward. Even at 9/11, you could see it if you looked. You could see the police who were coming in while people were running away. You could see the firemen, the firefighters who were walking up the stairs while the people were walking down. It was in the people like you and me who gave money and blood and prayers. It was in the outpouring of support and sympathy all over the world. We all watched for days after while people were digging with their bare hands in the rubble with tools because they heard a voice that might have been a living human being. We remember seeing them. All right? And even when the choices were very hard, Spirit was there. One of the things I saw after the fact was a picture of a man and a woman from one of the top floors who were holding hands and stepped from this world into the next. I wonder what they talked about on the way down. Something real, I'm sure. Now, the same thing happened in Orlando after the shooting there. The same thing happened in Nice when the truck driver went along the promenade. People were helping people, risking their own lives. The man who, even with his family there, raced his scooter after the truck and jumped on the truck and was punching the guy trying to stop him driving the truck in Nice. Total disregard for his own life. All these things show us the presence of a living, loving God existing in the world as us. As you, as me. Because we are those same people who did these things. It's completely present in all of us. So as we see this Spirit alive in them, the question becomes, what kind of a world could we create for ourselves if we all started living our own lives at the level shown to us by our fellow human beings? That's a lesson we did learn. Every day, there are people and emotions and ideologies and stuff competing for our attention. Some of them are fear-based beliefs, and they want to bring out the worst of us. Some of them are love-based beliefs, and they're going to bring out the very best. But they can only bring out the worst if we allow them to. If we allow them to. It concerns me that so many spiritually grounded people are not stepping forward and speaking their truth with all of this. That people who are completely aware of their divinity are not allowing that divinity to be expressed in the world. So let me start with the hard stuff. And it sort of touches on something that Angela mentioned that's very, very important. Let's start with how we think about the people who carry out these attacks. Okay, let's start with that. The young man at the church in Charleston, the truck driver in Nice, the group of young men in Paris who walked into the theater indiscriminately shooting. How do we see these people? You and me. Do we see them as evil? Do we see them as inhuman? Are those words that come to mind? I mean, we're going to have to face this eventually if we're going to solve this. How do we reconcile the principles, the common principles of vengeance and retaliation and justice with forgiveness and understanding and love for all people? How do we find a balance between those things? It may seem almost impossible to forgive someone who does these things, but that's why it's important that we do so, not for their sake, but for ours. Not for their sake, but for ours, for all of us, for our children, for our grandchildren, whoever it happens to be. I mean, let's face it, either these spiritual facts that we believe work all the time, or they don't work at all. That's what we got to realize. When Jesus said, "Forgive those who have harmed you," he wasn't talking about the people who cut you off in traffic. He was talking about the people who do these kind of things. The Buddha said, "We must see God in every person." 7 powerful words. We have to ask ourselves what is truly in our consciousness when we think about these people and what they did. Can I see them as misguided spiritual beings, or do I let the media tell me what to think? If you can answer that question honestly for yourself, you'll have a better understanding of your own level of spiritual growth. Just like Angela going, "Wait a minute, that's not where I live anymore." Right? Now, there's one more thing I need to say, and some of you are aware of this. It's sort of full disclosure as I talk about this. A number of you don't know me well. I grew up in a military family. I attended a military college. I flew military aircraft in Southeast Asia in the early 1970s at the end of the Vietnam War. I have never once been accused of being a bleeding heart liberal. Never once in my life. I spent 7 years flying military airplanes and 26 years flying commercial aircraft. Half my airline career was flying the exact same airplanes that were flown into those buildings. I know what the cockpits looked like. I know what the procedures were that they went through. I know that these pilots did everything they were trained to do absolutely correctly. And I know at the moment of their death, when I think about it, I can't breathe. I can't. I know that they felt despair, that they felt failure. They felt all those things. Because that's what I would have felt at the time. But if I allowed myself at the time to be consumed by the rage that I felt, then the people who did this would have won. They would have won. They would have taken from me my power to choose how I look at life, my power to choose what I believe about the basic goodness of life, and in the process, they would have enlisted me in accelerating the cycle of violence that somehow needs to end. As the old saying goes, if not me, who? If not now, when? Right? As long as we choose, this is the power we have, as long as we choose to remain grounded in our spiritual center, and it is our choice, as long as we hold fast to our belief that love is greater than fear, knowing that the only possible way we're ever going to find a solution over the long run is to do this, then what they're doing will be in vain, no matter what they try to do. Instead of creating the fear that these people try to create, they'll create a common bond, they'll create a spiritual bond, not just between Americans, but between everybody, between people of good heart everywhere in the world. And that might just push us on to another level in our spiritual evolution. Now, do the people who plan and carry out these events need to be stopped? Yes, of course they do. We're not that foolish. Do they need to be brought to justice and held accountable? Do they need to be told so we demonstrate that this kind of behavior is unacceptable in a civilized world? Yes, yes, and yes. We need to do that. But how we do this, is not nearly as important as the consciousness we do it with. You get that? Very, very important. We have every right to be angry, but we have to be careful about where we allow that anger to take us. That's a lesson both we and our political leaders need to learn, especially now, over the next 2 months. Right after 9/11, somebody said something. I still remember it. I thought it was very profound. They said, "It's important to save Americans, but it's also important that we save America. We save America, that we protect the ideals that make this country such a source of good in the world." Now, sure, we make mistakes. We make a bunch of them. And saving lives is important. But this country was founded on certain universal spiritual ideals that give human life much of its meaning. We have to realize we are not fighting a battle between good and evil, or a battle between the forces of light and the forces of darkness. There are no battles being fought within the mind of God. Let me say that again. There are no battles being fought within the mind of God. Satan is not doing this stuff. I heard that on the news the other day. Okay, it was, I won't say who it was, you know. And God is not permitting these things to happen. We have to be careful not to get drawn into an us versus them mentality, because we're all us. We're all us, and we're all them. We are all them. That's a lesson we still have not learned. If you read the newsletter today, I wrote something and put it in. I'm going to read it to you. It said, there are no spiritual forces fighting each other in the world. It's all God. Every person, every place, everything. Every situation, every experience, every condition. When we turn on a light switch, the light doesn't have to fight with the darkness to force it out of the room. The darkness doesn't go anywhere because it's not a thing. It has no power of its own. That's why people who use intentional violence to achieve their political ends are nothing more than a spot of temporary darkness. They're nothing more than a shadow in a world of light. And that's why we have to stop teaching our children, by our example, that violence is a long-term solution to the world's problems. It is not, and it never will be. It never will be. The natural order of the world is peace and understanding. Everything else that we're seeing and creating is illusion. It's all illusion caused by ignorance and misunderstanding. Those two things. Only when we learn to focus on peace, not just as a possibility, but as an absolute necessity, will we be able to create. The only hope we have for dealing with these kinds of events is to heal them at the heart level. Deepak Chopra wrote something at the time. He said, this was a deep wound on the heart of humanity and it affects us all. Beautiful, beautiful statement. But this attack did not come from out there. It didn't. We have to recognize the contribution of what is in here. If these things are an attack on all of us, then all of us have played a part in creating a world where they can happen. And all of us need to work together to try and figure out how we can heal a collective consciousness that can create something so unimaginable. So this is not about who we blame, it's about how we heal. And the place we need to start is in here, in our own heart. Why? Because if it doesn't happen there, in here, it isn't likely to happen anywhere. So this is not about our security or our safety, it is about our survival as a race of spiritual beings. That's what this is about. That's why these are lessons that we still need to learn, and the sooner the better. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in life. And so it is. All right. Let's take a moment now to ourselves. A lot of powerful emotions and memories, I'm sure, came up for you as they did for me. So let's focus on the truth that God, Spirit, is love. God is life. God is peace. God is awareness and understanding. These are the greatest powers in the world. And we have all been given complete access to these powers as our birthright. Each one of us, not just here, but every child born in every refugee camp, every person born in any country in the world of any race, any religion, has the ability to change the world in a positive way. Of course, we also have the ability to change the world in a negative way, but that power only destroys itself. That is the darkness that is displaced by the light. So as we create a world where every child matters, every person matters, every life matters, and we treat each other with respect and kindness, understanding that you are me and I am you, we begin to create a world not where we can heal these terrible events, but where we don't even create them. Where no one would consider doing anything like this to anyone, no matter who they are. We begin to create a world where the consciousness of love and peace and understanding is so pervasive among so many people that the light of that thinking slowly removes the darkness of anger, fear, and hatred. We are able to do this by choosing our leaders. We are able to do this by choosing our own behavior from day to day. We are able to do this by supporting those who support these ideas. We have the power of doing all these things. But the greatest power we have is to see peace as the only truth in our life and in the world. Knowing this, we give thanks for the ability we have to create good. We give thanks for the wonderful things that life brings. We give thanks for our ability to learn lessons. Finally, no matter how long it takes, to finally understand what we need to learn. So we accept these lessons with joy and understanding and a deep appreciation for their sacred significance. And knowing this, I release this awareness into consciousness, letting it be so for me and for the world. Join me in saying, and so it is.